Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Let's see if we can get this done. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Your home for what we call conversation radio. I have literally just walked in the door. My apologies for that. But we let out of the PRISM West Virginia American History Lecture Series at roughly 4:30. And this is, we are literally just getting in the door. So hopefully this will be an interesting and highly conversational Friday on the front porch. You know, the best part about Friday on the front porch is you, when we get together and cuss and discuss about the week's events as we contemplate the onrushing weekend. By the way, The Horn is available on a wide variety of platforms on the internet. Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio. It's easiest just to go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and get The Horn. And still don't have a working explanation for exactly what the skinny is with iTunes Radio. Marty noted on Wednesday's show that he was having a hard time couldn't find it. But then I heard from a couple of others who said, yeah, that's exactly how we're listening to it. Then I heard from more who said, no, that's not what we used to, but now we can't. So I don't know what the story is, but I highly encourage you, if you're looking for The Horn on iTunes Radio and you don't find it, by all means contact them and tell them you want it. I would think that would be the best way to get this remedied and rectified. What in heaven's name was that? It sounded like the beginning of Tall, Cool Woman in a Black Dress. Please. No more drama. No gremlins tonight. Big thanks go out to John Fox for the tech help he provided last night, late into the night here, up into his morning there in New South Wales, Australia. Thanks to him, I learned, as did the rest of you who viewed this morning's PRISM West Virginia American History Summer Academy Lecture Series. Well, it's not every day that you get someone as much of a foreign policy expert as Dr. Jeremy Suri, who gives you the personal attention of explaining the very essence and history of American foreign policy and diplomacy. Wow. It's all saved there at the PRISM West Virginia Ustream channel. Ustream.tv. Just search PRISM WV. Actually, I think it's Ustream.tv/channel/American-history-chat. So, by all means, check it out. And if you want the audio of it, frankly, I haven't been able to check. I don't know if Ben's putting them up on the White Rose website or not, but if you want it, I've uploaded everything, and I can send you an upload link if you write and ask. That would probably be the easiest way to go about things. But anyway, I am Bob Kincaid. This is Friday on the Front Porch on the Horn, a time when hopefully we recap the week and carry on a little bit, fool around, have a little bit of fun, laugh a little bit, maybe hit some of the lighter-hearted stories of the week, or not. It can get pretty heavy around here pretty quick. And I got some heavies and I got some stupids in today's stack. I thought I would share some remarks for you from Dr. John about last night's lecture by Dr. Bill O'Brien on American exceptionalism. If you missed it, go over and watch it or listen to it. Or, a couple of folks, Psychoticus Rex from the chat room comes immediately to mind, are actually turning these lectures into BitTorrents. And it's out there on BitTorrent, too. But Dr. Bill O'Brien took on American exceptionalism last night. And, I mean, the entire room, everyone, myself, Agnes, everybody, were on the edge of their seats. Just based upon the way he presented. It was scholarly. It was passionate. It was factual, and it was refutational. Because, you know, American exceptionalism to the right wing means when we, when little 16-year-old gymnasts wear red, white, and blue leotards instead of pink. That's American exceptionalism. Well, Dr. John wrote in, and he said that was a stunning talk. No other words for it. Over the course of an hour and a half, Dr. Bill unpacked the root of the idea, talked about each constituent part, and demonstrated that it was not intended to serve as cover for I get mine and screw you individualism, but tied to a very progressive idea of community. I was struck by his parallel between the Puritan concept of community and Obama's remark about how individual achievement is built on the work of others. That's something the right wing doesn't want anyone to know or to think about. Outstanding and interesting. And Dr. John doesn't just say stuff like that. You remember back in the 90s when Hillary Clinton wrote a book by the name of It Takes a Village, saying that when our children do well, they do well because their community and not just their family are interested in their well-being. Do you remember how the Flimballs and the Savages and the Hannitys and the O'Reillys and the rest of that filthy crowd hooted and hollered and hee-hawed and guffawed, "It takes a village." That Hillary. Did you hear about the Kentucky Fried Chicken Hillary special? Yeah, it's two small breasts in the left wing. Haul, haul, haul. Did you hear about why Hillary won't wear no mini skirts? Yeah, that's because she don't want nobody to see her balls. Oh, I got a million of them. Pardon me, I got to take off for the Clavering meeting this evening. You remember all that? Right-wingers make sport of the idea of community because they're afraid that somebody might actually want them to give back to the community some of what has been given to them. Yeah. Check it out, by all means. And then this morning, like I said, Dr. Jeremy Suri, as great a foreign policy expert as this country has to offer, thanks to the good offices of John Fox, we had Dr. Suri live from Austin, Texas via video to the classroom there and delivered it also to the wider world via the Ustream and the Hornstream. Dr. Suri literally took American foreign policy from the very beginnings of this nation, explained why ideas of traditional diplomacy did not jibe with what the fledgling country imagined diplomacy should be. And over the course of the morning, from about 8:40 a.m. Eastern Time to about noon, laid out pretty much the entire history of diplomacy and foreign policy in the United States. Had we kept asking questions, we probably would have been there all day. The man is, and he's a young man too. I think he referenced his son as 7. So he is just at the front end of what I expect will be an amazing career. He's already got a couple of excellent books out. Well worth the time it takes to listen to what he has to offer. And just by way of scheduling information, I'll let you know that I will do everything in my power to be back here from Prism. Prism wraps up on Monday afternoon. I'll do everything in my power to be back here in time for a show Monday afternoon, and then it appears that I'm going to be off to a mountaintop removal meeting that will eat up the rest of the week. Sorry. But then the next week is just regular programming. So, show Monday, nothing Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Sorry. I don't know. Maybe Friday. Maybe. Possibly. And another note, and it's a note of thanks. And that is this. I had a very nice email from Sam Cedar the other day, because a number of you have been advocating for Sam to invite me on his program to talk, you know, not about me. It's not about me. But to talk about the Appalachian Community Health Emergencies Act. The AIC Act. You can learn about it yourself, of course, if you haven't been there already, by going to AIC Act, A-C-H-E-A-C-T, AICACT.org. And so it would appear that I will be joining Sam for a conversation on Monday at about the top of the show, I think. So by all means, tune in, and thanks, Sam, for the invitation. I did. So it's about 14. Oh, one of these days I'm going to get this computer sorted out. It's about 14 minutes past the hour. And this is Friday on the front porch. We'll see where it takes us. Like I said, I've got some real booger stories here. Real creepy stuff. I had to laugh out loud. I don't know if Brother Albert's out there this evening, but I thought immediately of Brother Albert in our previous conversations when I found the story that noted that Willard has paid a visit to an Iowa farmer, and by farmer we mean he has 54 corporate farms somewhere in Iowa. He paid a visit to an Iowa farmer, multimillionaire. Willard doesn't hobnob with anybody who hasn't already made their first 10 or 15 million. But this here farmer, whose name I'm not going to use because it's one of those old German spellings that, well, you know, if B-O-E-H-N-E-R is Boehner and it's not Boner or Booner or Burner, or no, I'm not even going to try this because it's one of those spellings. What is it? K-O-E-T-H-E. Goethe? Like Goethe? Goethe? Of course, by the time you spend 100 years with it in Iowa, it probably turns into Keithy or Kathy or Kurthy or... You see what a swamp you get into? I remember the back in the day when the Associated Press would send a pronouncer around. It was awfully darned handy. No pronouncer for K-O-E-T-H-E. But we do know this, and this is why I thought of Brother Albert. The man lives in a spaceship house. No, really. A spaceship house. That, according to the Environmental Design Group. Well, here's the Environmental Design Group's design description. Arguably one of the most distinctive homes in Iowa, if not the nation, this personal residence takes unique architecture to a new level. It contains an underground garage equipped for multiple vehicles, as well as a car wash bay. The lower level also contains a large recreation center with an art display area. Grade level entry provides access to the elevator and a spiral staircase rising 35 feet to the main living area. The main level provides an amazing panoramic view of the area. Yeah, it looks like a spaceship. It looks like something that you would expect to see, some bug creature in a Men in Black movie trying to fly off to planet Kolob or something. But I thought, well, of course. Maybe it really is a spaceship. Maybe that's why Willard's visiting him. That's why I was thinking of Brother Albert, because Willard has spaceship money, and here's a man with a spaceship house. It all begins to make sense after a while, doesn't it? You see what I mean? Yeah. And in light of what has been going on for the past week with the PRISM West Virginia American History Summer Academy, this one kind of grabbed me, too. Because a lot of conversation time has been taken up in the last week trying to figure out what these right-wingers mean when they say, originalism. We have to interpret the Constitution by the original intent of the framers of the Constitution. We can't take into account any of that namby-pamby, sissy-pinko, communist time passage stuff. And hence I give you, if you haven't heard of it already, California Assemblyman Tim Donnelly, a Republican from California's 59th Assembly District. California Republican Assemblyman Tim Donnelly is a constitutional originalist. Everything he does is framed within the questions, of what would George do? George Washington, not George Bush. Or maybe George Mason. What would little Jimmy Madison do? Yeah, he was a little guy, barely 5 feet tall, really. That's why they called him Little Jimmy. Tim Donnelly gets up in the morning, you can imagine, and probably puts on his powdered wig and his waistcoat and his frock coat and his lace kerchief, and if he's like George Washington in the famous painting, probably a little bit of rouge, and either saddles up his horse or gets one of his servants to bring around the carriage and heads off to work and doing the hard work of governing there in the California Assembly. I imagine it's probably a bit of a booger on the freeway going into Sacramento, wouldn't you? I say that because Assemblyman Tim Donnelly is right peeved, and he can easily see from where he stands the end of our American freedoms. And we have to be ever vigilant, as the founders warned us. We have to be ever vigilant Because you never know when one of those liberals, one of them progressives, is going to come along and just take your freedom away from you. And you're never going to see it coming. Because you might think it could be coming from somewhere you never even imagined. Just like in California. You'll understand what I mean. Here's Repig-Lickin' Assemblyman Tim Donnelly.
With you on trying to prevent people from texting and driving. I actually think it's more dangerous than drinking and driving. Because you're distracted, you take your eyes off the road. I bet that every single one of us in this room, every one of us in this legislature, I bet the governor, I bet pretty much every Californian that has a phone capable of texting has done that. And what prevents us from doing it again is when you look up and you realize you're halfway over in somebody else's lane. And I think that the fact that you might cause a death, someone else's death or your own, is such a powerful prohibitor of that we really don't need to be increasing the fine, and I don't think we need to have the cops pulling people over and giving them texting tickets. I see the cops driving down the street texting. So when a cop is driving down the street texting, and he's going to give me a ticket for texting, I think it's wrong. And I think, ultimately, there's a great consequence to that kind of behavior.
Now wait, here it comes. Sit down, strap in.
And as intelligent, rational human beings, and who live in a free society, is it too much to ask that we just police ourselves? And it just seems that's what the founders intended. And I feel like this is just more of the nanny state type government that costs us a lot of money, and ultimately abridges more and more liberties to the point that, you know, what, the government got to tell me, you know, where I'm going to go next or how many miles I can drive?
I think they're trying to tell you how many miles you can drive while texting, Tim. Jesus. Did you catch that? As intelligent, rational human beings who live in a free society, is it too much to ask that we just police ourselves? I'll tell you what. When the burglar is knocking down your door there, originalist Tim, why don't you police that yourself? And I'm sure you're looking forward to it because you get one of your shooting guns out and, well, then he'll probably take it away from you and, oh well, hate to even talk about it. The founders intended for us not to get tickets for texting while driving. If you're able to breathe yet in between the laughing, the guffawing, the screaming, and the oh my God, what a jackass moments you're having right now, just understand, this is not atypical. And it's kind of shocking, or not, because it's coming from California. But it is. Now, distracted cell phone driving has been responsible for something on the order of 16,000 deaths between 2001 and 2007. Now, that doesn't even count the years between 2007 and now, in which smartphones have proliferated like mushrooms after a spring rain. This is what happens when the right wing decides that it's going to take principles of governing and sort of wedge them and squeeze them and squish them into a place where they fit their own weird ideological goals. You gotta wonder why Tim Donnelly doesn't want anybody at pulling him over for texting while driving. Could it be because he's, oh, I don't know, maybe married with a wife and four kids, and maybe he's texting his little rent boy? Or maybe texting some insider trading like Republicans do? Why would you say something so unutterably stupid. I mean, this isn't just ignorant. George Washington doesn't want... When did George talk to him? Or Madison? Or Franklin? Or Hamilton? Or Monroe? Or Gouverneur Morris? Or any of those old dudes? When did they tell it? When did they... Are there seances involved? Is this as breathtaking to you as it is to me? So when a cop is driving down the street texting and then he's going to give me a ticket for texting, I think it's wrong. Does he have any empirical evidence to put forward? No, he just makes a naked allegation, just like any... Look, it's a pisser when you're driving down the road and some county Mountie or state cop or local police constabulary type goes blowing by you on the highway, no siren, no lights, just, you know, getting down the road. Pisses you off. And so, too, would it piss you off if you were given a text by somebody that you knew was texting in the first place. But how did you know he was texting, or she? Because if you were paying that close attention to what was going on inside the cruiser, then you were probably engaged, texting or not, in reckless driving in the first place, right? I wish somebody who's apparently in touch with the spirit world and could get us the opinion of, say, you know, Madison. He was the genius of the bunch, after all, the real visionary. We talked about this, about trying to figure out what the world will be like 200 years from now. It's not an easy business. Because it's all guesswork. But I don't know. Somebody raise up James Madison from the spirit world. What do you want to bet he's been baptized by the Mormons? Just say it. Somebody raise James Madison up from the spirit world, please. And get his opinion on, oh, I don't know, the invasion of Iraq. Somebody get George Washington's opinion on the foreign entanglement of Vietnam, could you? Or maybe the moon landing. I bet Thomas Jefferson was absolutely thrilled by the moon landing. Or then again, I don't know, maybe the right wing would say that that was an inappropriate use of governmental resources and violated the principles of good small government. Who knows? Because more and more, it's like an acid trip. These people, these right-wingers just hallucinate who or what the hell ever they want. And expect a credulous, ill-educated public to simply fall for it. Sheesh. Mind-boggling. And I keep using that phrase, and it's because it's about all I got. It makes my little head hurt. But it is Friday on the front porch, and it's about 29 minutes before the hour. You know the number here, right? 877-443-2366. That's 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. And, of course, you can reach via email, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. jump on into the chat room. The conversation is fine there as well. It's free. It's easy. Good little group going on in there. Hey, Fritz. Hey, Benedict. Hey, Greg. Hey, Onward. Hey, Sal. Hey, Tim. Hey, Truth Seeker. Hey, Lottie. Hey, Sparky. See, it's just like Romper Room, and every bit as much fun. Ron and Raleigh, with a note, says, hey, Bob, sounds like a design by the architect Bart Prince, talking about the spaceship house of the guy whose name I can't pronounce in Iowa. Apparently, Bart Prince is responsible for some really weird-looking houses. Oh, and, yeah, spaceship houses, shoe houses, crashed airliner houses. Falling Water by Frank Lloyd Wright. Giant Pig House, Lubbock, Texas. Houses built for people with more dollars than cents. Jim noting, I've seen guys masturbating while driving, no lie. Jim, I'm not looking that close. But I have no doubt. I have no doubt. Dr. John has seen the spaceship house. Oh, my God, Bob. I just saw a photo. Freaking thing looks like a warehouse and a flying saucer in flagrante while a spiral staircase peeps in. Okay, we're living up to Friday on the front porch. Yeah, wander on up, get a lemonade, iced tea, cold long neck, pull out of the jug there with the corn cob stopper in the top. Beware, though, that stuff's about 160 proof. Dr. John, though, copped this. He's self-policing? Self-policing, you know, with texting. Is this jackass calling for posses and lynch mobs? Really? Yeah, we could have... Hey, that... Wow! Remember the other night how Abeka Books or Bob Jones Christian Book Publishing has a textbook out there that says that the Klan was quite respectable in many communities because it kept crime down, wife beaters and deadbeats and stuff like... Yeah. Well, hey, we could have a texting Klan. My God, that just sounds like the future, doesn't it? So this is our last chance for a little conversation before the weekend is upon us. By all means, light up the phones if you want to. They are open now. Better to do it now than to wait till later and then try to hope your conversation gets in the last 15 minutes of the program. Hey, welcome to the program itself.
Good evening, Mr. Kincaid.
Well, David from Maine, how are you?
I am fine.
Okay, I hope I'm not having technical problems, but I have almost no audio from you whatsoever.
You have no audio from me? Is this better?
It could get better.
Uh-oh. I don't know what to tell you.
Okay, well, I've got you cranked about as much as I can crank. Go for it.
Is this better now?
Yeah, some, yeah.
Okay. So I do have to confess, I was probably your booking agent on the Sam Cedar one.
Oh, excellent. Well, I know there were a number of letters that went in, but that's awesome.
Yeah, I would just suggest to people always mention it once and then mention it the next week just as a reminder, and you'll be surprised how far that goes.
Excellent, excellent. Well, like I said, it's looking like Monday at noon.
That's good. I mean, and then, you know, there's so many other hosts that you can read contact. There's Tony Truppiano. There's Norman Goldman. I mean, there's so many.
Which was something we didn't used to get to say, there was so many.
Right, right, right.
Hey, wow, you just got better. That may have been my fault.
Well, you know, I did want to suggest... one thing for some greatness to look at is the HD panorama Explorer photos are up now, and you can take a look at them.
Oh, wow, from Mars?
Yeah. It's pretty impressive. Everything you could think of and more as quality wise going. So.
Any particular site better than others for getting hands on them?
I'm looking at the one on the Erebus crater one right now, and that's really cool just to look at that. I do find it interesting that I don't think the media, surprise, Bob, has done a really good job at selling this exploration in terms of just saying, you know, we're going out there to explore, but more so, you know, it's when people saw the photos, I was looking at some of the reaction, and most of the reaction was like, who's boring? This is a bunch of rocks. That's the kind of reaction I kept hearing. And I was like, you guys don't get it. I mean, this is research unparalleled ever before that we're doing right now that's going to be done on this planet that's going to help and benefit us for the long run of our civilization for centuries to come.
I've seen a couple of reports, David, you know, showing some grainy black and white photos, but now you say the HD color stuff is up.
Yeah.
The biggest thing I saw, though, was the footage they showed of all the scientists jumping up and down and waving their arms in the air when the landing was accomplished, and after that it was yawn.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the biggest problem is that we're such a visual culture, and we've developed into such a visual culture, and it's probably to our deficit regarding this, is that we never paid that much, we never put that much of a focus on information. And now it's to our detriment to try to explain to people because they're like, I got to see some pictures that look cool. That's basically where we're at.
Where's the one with the Elvis face?
Yeah, where's the pyramid with the Joaquin Phoenix face? Where can I get that one?
We're jaded. We're definitely jaded, David.
Yeah, so I think, but I think on the plus side is that I just hope we see a Marvin the Martian or an intergalactic centipede, just so we can. But I wonder how long that will be before someone says, "Well, that's just a centipede." I mean, what will it take? What will it take to get people ultimately interested in this?
Well, that was my next question. If you stop and think about this long enough,
yeah.
And frankly, you know, me being a nerd, it doesn't take very long at all.
Right.
But we just put an incredibly complicated piece of machinery on top of a giant bullet, aimed it at Mars.
Right.
And got it there. I mean, how long was the trip?
7 months, two years, something like that.
We did that.
Yeah, we definitely needed that as a boost. I mean, and what's crazy, Bob, and we really did shut our mouth on this, and I would say to progressive and liberals, do not shut your mouth on this. When Republicans are celebrating, look at them in the face and say, that's government. That's all you need to say, that's government. And the fact that we don't say that really shows you where we are now. And
well, that's sad but true. On another level, David, do you suppose if we had had a manned mission to Mars,
yeah,
that people would be paying any more attention? I mean, we're paying less attention. The right wing, you know, we're not at the Olympics yelling USA, USA like God and Jeebus want us to be yelling USA, USA. Where's our Americanceptionalism?
Yeah.
Well, how about landing a giant robot machine on Mars for American exceptionalism? Well, robots don't count.
Well, you know,
and was it painted red, white, and blue? That's what I want to know.
Can you imagine if this happened under it probably wouldn't, though, under a presidency like Romney or under another Bush, like what the reaction would be times 10, and then the fact they would say, well, the Democrats, they couldn't do that, but the Republicans, they should.
All the for-profit media, that would be the only message they had.
Yeah, and then they would just keep hammering it over and over and over again.
God-fearing conservative Republicans land a robot on Mars, and it's carrying a Bible. in case it finds any creatures that need saving.
There you go. That's the bulletin from the I've Got Nothing Institute.
By the way, the I Got Nothing Institute got a lot of love.
Well, that's good. I mean, I'm serious about business cards. I want to make some business cards up. I may pay some money and have everybody have these really deluxe type business cards. Like, you can't get them unless you get them from a custom order. I don't know. I want to make it into something. just to see people's reaction in terms of...
It could be the next Church of the Subgenius.
Yeah, I mean, and it would all be under a sub of the Head On Radio family, and it would just be interesting to see. But I did want to say something about the Mars exploration that I think we need to poke in just a little bit more regarding this exploration. You know, Bob, we always think in terms of exploring planets and exploring the universe in terms of actually bringing our body there. As an astronaut, I'm thinking as more and more technology goes along, we are actually going toward the road of not astronauts, but astronauts.
Okay, flesh that one out, please.
Well, what I mean is that as technology continues to progress, and we continue to be merging with the future as it goes along, it's almost to the point where we don't actually have to be on that planet, if you get what I'm saying.
Oh, that's one of the hot theories in space exploration, if I understand correctly, that we don't that while there's a sort of sexy adventuresomeness to it, there's not a lot that putting a human being on Mars could tell us that this robot can't.
Yeah, I mean it's I think with when you look at the HD panoramic views. And you just play around with it, and you get this sense of almost vertigo if you spin too fast, like, you know, with Google Earth and stuff. We're almost on the cusp of that. And then there's the news with in Europe where they all have the Minority Report screens already up with the gloves and the screens and everything, and just, you know, touch this, touch that, move this square here, move this square there.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you look at space exploration, we may just be at that level where, okay, everybody, we're going to go explore Uranus. Okay, everybody, let's go to sleep now. And we're traveling in our subconscious.
You just had to use that planet, didn't you? Oh, no, not Saturn. No, no, not Neptune, not Pluto.
Yeah.
We're going to go explore Uranus.
You did
that on purpose, and I know it.
No, I did not do that on purpose. But, you know, it's always good to have something unintended turn out like that. I did want to say, though, I watched a special, and you'll find this really fascinating. It's on the inner workings of neuroscience, and they were doing experiments in Amsterdam. And one of the things, Bob, they did was they have an experiment called the Dollhouse Experiment. Now, the Dollhouse Experiment involves actual people. Now, think about this for a second. They have screens on your head, like literal, like video visors on your head, so you're looking at a pair of legs. But the trick is, you're not looking at your legs. You're looking at the doll legs. But you think you're looking at your legs.
No, I understand what you're getting at.
Yeah, yeah. So what they do is, they go through the process of the subconscious. And so they start touching the legs of the doll, and the mind literally thinks that you're touching those dolls. But what the crazy thing about it, this is the craziest thing about it, is that when they start to put some element of pain, the other suspect feels that pain. It's triggered in their mind. They're feeling this pain. While they literally are touching the doll, and they can explain it to him even. This is the crazier thing. They explain, listen, right now, even though you think you're feeling pain, the doll's legs, these are just doll's legs, they're not yours, but the mind is already connected.
Wow. Okay, my mind is bent like the warm saltwater taffy sat too long in the sun.
Here's the crazy thing about the level of neuroscience that is not being talked about on TV. So one of the things they do, one of the other things they do is they want to improve the mind a certain way, like tweak it for problem solvers. So there's another experiment that they do, which is it's regarding one of the scientists who went over to Tibet, and he decided to explore. This is like in 1985. He decided to explore how monks are able to jet their bodies up to 15 degrees when they're basically in stages of hypothermia. So he was just baffled by this, and he researched it for a number of years, and he came back and he delved more into the world of neuroscience, and he wanted to know, okay, if you can do that, what else can you do with your mind that you're not doing? So he got into electrical impulses, and he decided to prove how electrical impulses can stimulate and improve your brain through problem solving. So they have so in the footage they have this series of like popsicle sticks, and you have to make a sense out of every single one. And for people who are not analytical, they were having trouble with it. Now dig this, Bob. After 20.
Well, we know what would happen. I just like popsicles.
After 20 or so seconds, this is the crazy thing. After 20 or 30 seconds of these electrical impulses that they have on their head, they are able to do these problems that they weren't able to do before. Now here's the crazier thing. After these sessions, it stays with them, and they're able to do problems like this, and they progress even more.
Wait, that's all I had to do to understand trig?
I think, you know what? It's like that movie with Bradley Cooper that they were advertising called Limitless, where you take a pill and you tweak your mind and you're able to do things that you weren't able to do before. It's that kind of self-improvement through neuroscience that a lot of people are really getting excited about. And also it helps people who have a lot of mental disabilities or just have the inability to do certain things. And this gets into the whole world of, okay, so how far do we go with this? And the problem is that you know who's going to be the first people to get dibs on this technology, don't you? It's already there, by the way.
No, tell me.
The military?
Well, sure. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was trying to... I was actually thinking of who would it benefit, but no, military.
I mean, it's already in service with the.
Look, it's obvious. I was, like I said, I just drove in from Prism and literally got in the door and got in the chair in time to start the show, and I was listening to a story on National Petroleum Radio about how it Israel and or the United States may be the cyber warfare hackers who have infected the Lebanese banking system. And suddenly I just had this, I had this vision of some neo-maxi Zoom dweeby, guy in the basement of the NSA. You know, he's 32 years old and he still has pimples on his face like a 14-year-old, writing virus code because that's the new front end warfare. But everything, I suppose, has some sort of military application. I'm sure there are military experiments of some sort going on with the rover on Mars. But just to back up a second with regard to the Mars thing, I think you're right. President not sure. Missed a real messaging opportunity because he should have gone to wherever the Goddard Space Flight Center, and had a big to do there and looked at the crowd and said, "You didn't do this." And then have that entire crowd of rational scientists answer in unison, "You're right, we didn't. This was based upon years and years and years of scientific research and mathematical discoveries that go all the way back to the design of the aqueducts in Rome." Because they do. This is that perfect moment.
Yeah.
You know what? We have an actual bona fide, genuine, no kidding rocket scientist in the Horn family who would probably attest to this. You know, nobody did this by themselves.
Right.
And yet, no. I'm sure that Willard is out there trying. Find me the scientist who did this by himself. I want to prove that, you know what I mean? This is that. This is exactly what you said. This is the government doing cool government stuff.
And you know, the other thing is that when people who are not even interested in this, and I'm sure there are some people listening who are just tuning in, and some people just aren't interested in that element, and I understand that. But here's the thing you need to understand regarding this. This elevates everything. So when you find out about that you're able to do an expedition like this, this opens the doors for just not space exploration. It opens the door for so many other fields, because then you start thinking along the lines and you start having those children who are sitting in their beds and being like, wow, I didn't know we could do this. I only just thought we could go here and go there, but I wonder what I can do with my education for tomorrow. Where can I go with this? How can I?
Well, you know what? You know what? If NBC did a story on it,
yeah.
You know what they could do? They could get Bob Costas to comment on it and say, maybe a lot of African American children will now take a second look at math and science and engineering, and they might want to do it too. And we'll be back right after these messages. And then they could, like, just like they did with Gabby Douglas, they could cut to a promo of, I don't know, a monkey with a calculator.
You know, that whole Gabby Douglas thing was so shameful. The fact that anyone even focused on a girl's hair and had to bring that up. I was actually looking
at... Oh, hair, leotard, monkey on the rings. I've run out of ways that NBC could have possibly screwed up this coverage any more than they already have. But you
know
what?
Did you hear what your mother said, though?
No.
Gabby's mother said, listen, I don't understand why so many people are going so completely crazy over her hair. At the place where she was sponsored to stay at, her sponsors, they didn't know how to take care of her hair properly because they never had a black woman in their house. That's what she said. They had to make do with what they had at that area.
Oh, Jeebus. But why? I mean, but why at all? But if you want to delve down into the ultimate. And this is the ultimate stupidity of NBC's coverage.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they've already Olympics coverage has already been busted for focusing on the women's sports that involve little tiny clothing. I think on Wednesday night's program, Jim shared with us some commentary he heard on the Titanic right wing radio over there in Beckley. Where, you know, the dirty old right-wing conservative men were speculating on the volleyball uniforms or whatever. But NBC itself has a video out called Bodies in Motion. And the written description for Bodies in Motion, which is not embeddable, you've got to go and see it at their site. So the written description says, check out these bodies in motion during the Olympic Games. And it's female athletes, and NBC has reduced them to bodies. No minds, no determination, no grit, no hard work, no sweat, no sleepless nights, no worry, no fear, no nerves, no butterflies, no pride, no years and years and years of self-denial in pursuit of a goal. Their bodies in motion.
The craziest thing about all of this, and a lot of people don't think about this, but they should probably think about this, and I think they do think about it more so if they have daughters and along that line. But the magnification that we put on body types, hair type, all of that, and how we constantly just have fed our culture in this way, it's so unproductive, and it's so limiting in such a way where it makes so many people insecure and go exactly the wrong direction regarding their hairstyle, their image, and everything. I mean, it just makes people go insane, basically.
And in, by the way, if you go to look for that Bodies in Motion video,
mm-hmm.
I think it's been taken down. So
I did want to say one last thing that should make us give pause to think. There's an e-card going around with the following caption. And Bob, I think this basically puts a bow on it. Everything from prayer meeting Wednesdays to space explorations. So somebody made this e-card and says this: we lose $71 billion a year from the tax exemptions of churches. That's 28 Mars rover missions a year.
Wow. And we really do lose it. We really
do lose it.
It's just down the drain.
And you know, that's discussion for another day, but we really do.
Yeah.
We really do need to get
by the way, you got a little pushback from Ron and Raleigh on the whole neuroscience story.
Yeah.
He says, sounds familiar. This sounds like Flowers for Algernon to me. This can't end well.
Well, you know what, Ron? I think it's all in the degree of how much you push it and where we decide to go with it. But here's my point. If it helps people who have concussions, if it helps people who have disabilities, let's get those electrical impulses going, people.
Exactly, exactly. David, good to hear from you. Have a wonderful weekend.
All right, Bob, you too.
And thanks for the help with Sam.
All right, later.
Bye now. Horn pop culture correspondent David calling from Maine. Lines are open. Let's light them up. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 is the number you call if you don't have to worry about toll charges, stuff like that. This in from Tim from L.A., contacting the dead presidents. Dear Jeebus, can you please put George on? No, not Wally George, you moron. George Washington. Gads! George Washington. Harp music and horn bells playing. Yes? How can I help you? Me. Hello, Mr. President. Bob Kincaid, the host from the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and ACAC.org, asked if you can answer this question. George Washington, harp music and hornbells playing. Yes? Me. Did you ever think that the Republican Party would be so idiotic and destructive of the country you helped shape, believing that the current president is from Kenya, that the teabaggers today would align itself with the Tea Party movement of 1773, and that the future Republican Party would follow some sky spook over logic? George Washington, harp music and hornbills, stops playing, sighs, and I'm so glad I'm dead. Who would have thought that freedom would mean freedom from logic? Oh, and remember to support HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Go to the ACAC.org and stop being such a moronic teabagger and learn. Thanks, Tim. My God. Gads. Gads. It's only 4 p.m. out there, Tim. Let's keep it rolling. We're at the top of the hour. And I'm exhausted, but we're going to try to get through these 2 hours. We really, really are. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how are you doing?
Hey, Jim, how are you?
Oh, I'm here. It's Friday night.
I know the feeling. I'm
probably very, very, very tired in your efforts to promote your prism.
Well, it's not mine. It's Dr. Bill's. But, yeah, I'm kind of worn out. I think we got to sleep at 1 this morning, and we're back up at 5:30, something like that.
Well, I consider that a major degree of effort, that's for sure.
But it was worth it, because John Fox was a huge help last night, and we got our professor on from Austin, Texas, and my goodness gracious, what a conversation that was.
I'm sure. I look forward to hearing it. Can I just depart from something that's totally insane?
Well, absolutely.
I remember, I think it was back in the middle 70s, that National Lampoon had published this thing. You remember the crazy stuff they used to put in there?
Yes.
And what they had done, they had taken people, who were like, on their stomachs and with their bare buttocks showing, and they had little army men and stuff like that all over it, and they had one guy who was ice fishing in the cleft of someone's buttocks saying there is life on Uranus.
Oh, dear God. See, I knew David would make trouble with that.
Well, anyway, my dad was a member of the OX5 Club, which is like the Pioneer Aviators of America, and he's always interested in space flight and stuff like that. And so I Xeroxed a copy of that, whole pictorial spread that National Lampoon had put out, okay?
Yeah.
And then I wrote this dummy letter that was like, the return address was Jet Propulsion Laboratory, Pasadena, California. And it was dear so-and-so, knowing your interest in flight and stuff like this, we would, like to interest you in photographs of life in interplanetary space and on other planets. And so I stapled it all together and put it in a brown metal envelope and sent it to him. And of course on the outside was just a fake JPL address in Pasadena and that cover letter. And he received it. And so I received a phone call from him a couple of days later. And he said, you know, those whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make bored.
Well, a gentle message that you had too much time on your hands.
Well, I mean, you know, I was just playing a practical joke, that's all. And but, you know, the way they had done it, and this is before, like, Photoshop came in, it looked pretty real, other than the little men and stuff like that, this little army men that, you know, I used to play with as kids and stuff like that. And I said, why not? You know, I'll give him a lift from his Daily Mail of effort of retrieving all this stuff from the mailbox. And he I think, was somewhat amused, but not too very much amused, you know?
Yes, indeed. Indeed. No, that was worth the effort.
Well, it was just an effort of humor. But I can remember another time when I had on my answer machine, and this is back before I moved to D.C. I think it was back before. Yeah. I'm still living in Columbia, South Carolina. And I had placed this message on my answer machine. And I had some kind of little device that would do reverb and make it sound like space sound. And I said on the answer machine, I am Zog, Emperor of the planet Porto. Be advised that all pornographians have been transported from their planet to the depths of interstellar space to the surface of Uranus, and leave your name, your number, or your hailing frequency, and your call will be returned.
Beautiful.
And it blew out the answering machine. There were so many calls on there that the machine just broke. I mean, it literally started smoking.
Good God.
So, I mean, you know, point of fact is, number one, don't play tricks with things that are very serious, and don't use your answer machine with provocative messages, because you will be paid.
You'll get the response you didn't want in the first place.
You'll be repaid in the coin of the realm, which you cannot spend. And, you know, that's just my only thing I wanted to say. I just remember that.
Let me ask you, since apparently I did conjure you, what was it that the geniuses over there were speculating about, the women's beach volleyball swimsuits or something? You mentioned that the other night.
Yeah, they were going on and talking about how they didn't move, and it was just incredible how these bikini lower parts didn't reveal anything more revealing. And of course, you can almost hear, you know.
Yeah, I know. They say that watching a television with a magnifying glass is not good for you, but I can. It couldn't hurt the brains of that bunch.
No, it couldn't. I mean, they went on to enthuse about this, and instead of talking about the opening ceremonies or other sports and stuff like that, that's what they were all fixated on.
But apparently NBC is not far behind, Jim, because they're fixated too, because there hasn't been that much coverage of women's sailing or fencing or anything that doesn't involve it, you know, the small tight clothing.
Well, you know, I remember back in '88 when Greg Louganis did that dive and almost split his skull open on the board. There wasn't that much coverage about that, except the fact that, you know, he was HIV positive and they had to stitch his scalp. Remember that?
Yes, absolutely. I guess what we're engaging here is some wishful thinking, Jim. Wishing that the for-profit media had a little bit more depth and a little bit more, I don't know, gravitas to them.
Yeah, I mean, when I heard those interviews with some of the athletes by Bob Costas and some of the other people about this, that, and the other, I thought a lot of the questions were just absolutely stupid and inane. And, you know, they, I was really disappointed in, to a certain expanse, with my Olympic experience this time. Because it's just incredible. I watched the long swim down the river that goes through Hyde Park.
Yeah, what is that? Open water swimming or some such?
Water swimming. And I don't know how these guys do stuff like that. My God in heaven. I mean, they must train for years to be able to have the stamina and the endurance to be able to not only to endure the length of that river and the temperature, which was like 65.5 degrees.
Yeah, that's right, brisk.
I mean, it's just incredible how these guys, and one guy had done it both in the pool and in the open river. And, you know, that's one reason I like the Olympics, though, because it really shows a great deal of effort that these athletes have made. They devoted their entire lives to the accomplishment of participating and the chance of winning recognition. It's just incredible to me. And
well, that's what makes that NBC thing of bodies in motion. That's what makes that so repugnant.
Yeah, exactly. We're not talking about blue games for the guests or blue games for the TV sports enthusiasts. We're talking about human effort, absolutely superhuman effort.
But, you know, this is a story from a couple of weeks back, but there was a critic. I mean, the guy is a professional critic. I don't mean he was just somebody complaining about something. Who, as a setup, you have to understand that Twitter and NBC entered into some sort of unholy partnership to promote the Olympics coverage on social, on Twitter. And this guy criticized NBC's coverage for the vacuous hot mess that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, the guy's Twitter account was suspended for violation of terms of service.
I wonder why.
Well, and so too, I suppose, people who get suppressed in totalitarian regimes wonder why, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it would benefit us to begin to think more in terms, Jim, of not necessarily national boundaries, and this is part of the whole my mind is spinning thing that's been going on in my head covering PRISM for the last week. Governments are not the only things, and perhaps not the primary things, here in the second decade of the 21st century that can be repressive and oppressive. There's nothing more repressive and oppressive than the transnational corporation. And so when NBC didn't like the negative coverage it was getting, in comes the truth squad and out goes the truth.
There you go. Did you see the opening ceremonies by any chance?
I saw a good bit of them. In delay, not live, of course.
Did you see the openings of frames of it?
No.
Well, Daniel Craig, James Bond, was dressed in a tuxedo, and he is in the royal apartments, and there's Queen Elizabeth at her desk. And he walks up to her and says something, and then they're both out the door. And then the next shot you see is a British parachute, or a parachute like one of the old Roger Moore films that had the Union Jack on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next shot was the Queen Elizabeth in the stands. As if she had left Buckingham Palace and parachuted right down there into the middle of the Olympic Stadium.
Yeah, with the assistance of Bond, James Bond.
James Bond, that's right. Jacob, not third. But I thought to myself...
And speaking of which, I have seen vacuous coverage of the Olympics in which they did some sort of human interest thing where they... went and got went to the Bond Museum and then they who knew that there was a James Bond Museum, but of course I'm sure there is, and then they went to some bar and some bartender showed them how to make the perfect shaken not stirred martini. Gee, many.
Yeah,
there's just you can feel the brain cells dying.
Well, I just thought, you have problems with Queen Elizabeth, I don't, but I mean, and you could look at her face when they asked her to participate in this, and you could tell she was definitely not amused.
No.
Anything for Great Britain or whatever.
Is it for the good of the realm?
Exactly.
Oh, yes, Your Majesty, it is. Oh, well, the sacrifices I must make.
Yeah, exactly.
Get me the parachute.
You know, it's a pity the Queen Mother was still alive, or maybe they could have done something with her.
Yeah, she had a sense of humor.
Yes, she did. Bless her heart.
Didn't you tell me once that she used to go down and drink with the staff?
Well, no, she called down from her apartments, and most of her staff was gay. They were all gay, as a matter of fact. She basically had these elder gentlemen in her service, and they presented no problem with her, and she rang down. She wanted a drink. I mean, the good old Queen Mum loved to have her cocktail, and she rang down, and she said, "Will one of you old queens bring this old queen a drink? I'm thirsty." Yeah. And
God bless her.
There are all kinds of stories that I've read about telephone conversations with the royal family. I think it was King George V who had a sister named Victoria, and they were very, very close. Very close. And so Victoria had called King George V on the phone, and of course the palace operator hadn't put the call through, but his sister said to him, and this is documented, she said, "Is that you, you old fool?" And the palace operator intervened and said, "Ma'am, His Majesty, Your Majesty, His Majesty is not yet on the line." Well, at least, you know, King George had a peculiar sense of humor, and George V did. That's what I'm sure.
Well, you really would have enjoyed the conversations on PRISM today, because, among other things, Keith Lilly was went into a digression about the correspondence between Tsar Nicholas and Wilhelm II, and the fact that they each corresponded with each other in perfect English and referred to each other as Dear Nicky and Dear Willie.
Yeah, they were first cousins. As a matter of fact, you know, the Tsar was depending on the fact that his dear cousin, whom he knew so well, the Emperor of the Second Reich, wouldn't do what he did, while all the time being advised that by one of his advisors, that the Kaiser, at this point, had become a deceitful megalomaniac, and you couldn't trust a word that he said. And up to the very last day before August 4th, when Germany declared war on Russia, I think it was at 7 p.m. on August 4th, when Prime Minister Sazonov came in and told the Tsar that, in fact, Germany had declared war on Russia because they had decreed the general mobilization. And but the Willy Nicky correspondence is interesting to read, those telegrams and stuff like that in all the case books that were put out that were determined the reason for the beginning of hostilities. And as I said the other night, Kaiser Wilhelm was a very, very misunderstood person and was in many cases purposely misunderstood. I mean, the guy changed uniforms 5 times a day.
Even MacArthur didn't do that.
No, but he changed uniforms 5 times a day. And, you know, he had this withered arm, and, of course, he would have to shake hands with his left arm. And he also would wear special rings that when you shook hands with him, it's a wonder you didn't have blood coming out of your hand because of the grip. And the Kaiser would always turn his rings in so they would bite. So I guess it was determined from that that if you got a handshake from Kaiser Wilhelm II, you didn't forget it.
Mercy.
And when they had family gatherings, things of that nature, William II, Wilhelm II, would insist upon, you know, being the leader of all the family gatherings and would go forth and insist on reading all these long passages from the Bible to the members of the coterie at the tea party or whatever they were or function they were having. And that's the reason why Queen Victoria referred to him as a very badly brought up young man. But, you know, I just wonder what type of person he would have been if he had been born whole and he had, you know, two normal right hands and not a withered arm and not had to engage upon such compensatory behavior. Because in many respects, as I said the other night, he was very far-reaching. He was a curious dichotomy of an individual. There was one part of him that was extremely socially progressive and another part that was just wholly militaristic. And that's the reason I sent you the email of the Fritz Fischer thesis.
Yes.
Which was basically stating that it was more of the German business community than the military that helped precipitate the Great War. And that's the basic of Fritz Fischer. And Fritz Fischer was really taken to task for that. And I think he wound up his last days as a professor at the University of Hamburg or someplace like that. But it basically exposed the German war drives and what was behind them. It was the German corporations more than the military. Because they realized exactly what was happening after 1890 with the departure of Bismarck. You know, Bismarck was a pretty savvy fella, and Kaiser Wilhelm did not like him at all. Did not. And, of course, you know, the reason they had the Schlieffen Plan, which was to let the last man on the right brush the channel with his sleeve, which would have really guaranteed him success in the initial days of the First World War. But the trouble was that plan was modified, and, of course, they had to deal with 6 million Russians coming into East Prussia. Well, the whole thing is pretty interesting, and I'm glad you brought up the Willy Nicky correspondence and things of that nature, because the Tsar was a very trusting person in many respects, and he certainly made a mistake when he placed any trust in his his cousin. As a matter of fact, if you go back, they had a meeting between their yachts off the course of Bjorko in Finland, in which Nicholas completely turned the whole Russian foreign policy around, away from being a friend of the French and the English to being a friend for the Germans. It was just a real diplomatic mess. I mean, you had all sorts of bizarre things that were happening that would lead to a very, very bad conclusion, a very serious conclusion. And you know what that was.
Indeed. Indeed.
But anyway, I just thought I would interject a little humor there. Probably not found too humorous by most people, but I just...
You'd be surprised. There's a lot. You bring more giggles than you know, Jim.
Well, I hope I bring more than giggles, but I mean, I hadn't thought of that.
No, but when you intend to bring them, you bring them.
Okay. Well, listen, maybe there is life on Uranus.
God. Oh, I love a simple joke.
Well, I mean, you know, Bob, life has gotten so serious, and it's gotten to the point where with me, and I remember saying back from this particular era from which we've been talking, you know, about I think it went in Vienna, the situation in Berlin, the situation is serious but not hopeless, but in Vienna it's hopeless but not serious.
Well said.
All right, you've got other people wanting to talk to you, so I will not waste any more of your time.
Take care. It was no waste, Jim. Have a good weekend.
Same to you, sir. Good night.
Bye now. It's our good buddy, Jim. Hopeless but not serious. By the way, David from Maine has sent me along one of these panoramic photos. Yeah, it's really cool. Who knew that the red planet had grays and blue-greens and... Oh, this is just neat. Because I reiterate, I'm one of those... Well, I was born in 1963. I was born with the space age. Oh, look. Yeah, somebody was doing donuts on Mars with Curiosity. Okay. But it is. It's absolutely fascinating. For a variety of reasons. If you see a photograph like this, and I'm gonna pop the link into the chat room. If you see a photograph like this, your first thought is, I'll be damned. That's Mars. But then you take a second and you think, lifeless, treeless, plantless, waterless. Could that ever be, you know, here? Could that ever be Earth? And the first thing that came to my mind when that thought hit me was, well, God, that was almost Ronald Reagan. Yeah. Well, yes, it could. Especially if the 1% or the 0.1% crowd gets its way. Because remember, they want it all. The 1%, we've asked that question in the past, and of course others far brighter than I have asked it previous. What was the guy thinking on Rapa Nui who cut down the last tree? Well, if it ever gets to that point, put it this way, if that person had been a member of the Rapa Nui 1%, he was thinking, mine, mine, all mine, and I'm going to take it, and I'm going to make a big profit, and make more, whatever we're using for barter, clamshells, or seashells, or puka shells, or I'm going to be rich, I'm going to be comfortably well off, I'm going to be socially secure. Because that's how the 1% think. Yeah, there's a ton of stuff to go into this evening, and of course it is Friday on the Front Porch. If you want to get in on the conversation, I heartily encourage you to. You know the number, 304-658-3333, if you don't have to worry about toll charges. If you need the toll-free help, 877-443-2366. How much do you know about Brigham Young University? I know it used to be really frustrating back in the what, in the 80s or whatever, when they played in the WAC, the Western Athletic Conference, the football nerd, and they'd play a patsy schedule all season long, wind up, Lavelle Edwards' team would wind up undefeated, and they'd play the Southwest State University for the blind and legless. No, not making jokes about me. And then they would declare themselves national champions. I knew that about them. But no, it's a weirder place. I guess you could say it's Bob Jones University for Mormons. Because you know at Bob Jones University, interracial dating is illegal, and yeah, they ain't gonna be no smooching on campus, and hand holding is frowned upon. Well, I guess at Brigham Young University, straight students can hold hands and stuff. They can kiss. They can generally express affection because, after all, the Mormon Church is all about families and having lots of babies and right. Well, if you're a gay student if you're an LGBT student at Brigham Young University, you are forbidden by the rules of that institution of so-called higher learning from kissing or any display of personal affection in public whatsoever. Probably in private, too, if they catch you. Well, the home of Brigham Young University is Provo, Utah. And the main drag, no pun intended, the main drag through Brigham Young is University Avenue. There was some street repair going on University Avenue Wednesday. And you know those programmable blinking signs that, you know, things like merge, left lane closed ahead, you know, amber lights easily seen in the dark, that kind of thing. A driver on University Avenue Wednesday evening rolled up toward one of these repair sites where one of these blinking signs was. It's got some little self-contained generator and everything. And instead of being warned to merge left or merge right or stop ahead or any of that kind of stuff, the sign was flashing with the message, "God hates gays." This is Provo, Utah. You can't blame this one on the Westboro Baptist Church. The Westboro Baptist Church, I'm not sure they even know how to work the business end of a computer. If they do, it's probably an old TRS-80 with a tape drive and 5 1/4-inch floppies. And about a 1 megabyte hard drive, if it even has one of those. No, somebody in Provo hacked into this sign so that everyone who drove past it would be exposed to a message of hate, bigotry, prejudice, and intolerance, flashing in bright, high-visibility amber bulbs, "God hates gays." Hurrying to pass the buck along, the public information officer for Provo, Utah, Helen Anderson, said, "Oh, that sign does not belong to us. That sign belongs to a contractor for the Utah Department of Transportation, not the city of Provo. I personally find it very offensive." Despite every effort to prevent it, sometimes signs like this get hacked. The city's contacted the team working on this construction project, and they're looking into it. According to this story I'm reading over at Crooks and Liars, calls to the Department of Transportation in Utah were not returned. They got a real problem at Brigham Young, you see. to be gay at the Mormon answer to Notre Dame. Is to live in a special kind of hell. Gay people at Brigham Young reported higher than usual incidences of contemplation of suicide. So that blinking light that said God hates gays, That might as well have hacked it and programmed it to say, do it! Do it! Off yourself! A couple of notes on Mars. Steve says, just a note on Mars. We would already be within spitting distance of a manned Mars landing if the original scientific reasons for landing on the moon in the first place had been realized as an assembly and launching platform for continued exploration of the solar system. Of course, we know any rational and humanistic reasons for exploring other worlds always take a backseat to military technology development in the end. Remember that during the coldest period of the Cold War, it was the Air Force's dream to consolidate all space-related research and development under the aegis of a comic book-style military space command kind of structure. Orbiting hydrogen bombs, anyone? Yeah, wasn't that the plot of Space Cowboys? So we end up with the space shuttle program and its numerous clandestine contributions to the development of weaponry and related applications. Hello, unmanned drones! And here's a spanking brand new smartphone for the kiddies. Growing up during the heyday of the space program, I think I must have spent half my school time watching rockets take off from Canaveral. Well, after all, I grew up in Tampa and it was a good deal for the teacher. Just click on the TV and watch the students' jaws go all agape as the weird machines go up. But we did learn a little science, and we took subjects like evolutionary theory seriously, even in the fourth grade. Go to Mars? Not on your life. It's the sort of thing to scare the bejesus out of some. Science and arithmetic and all that other book learning, don't you know? Seriously, though, we should go to Mars, just since it's there, and because we can. Steve. And I'll add, and because we're humans, and we do that kind of stuff. Yeah, remember from Wednesday night the story of the Christian home or Christian school text on mathematics? We won't have any of that higher mathematical set theory. We'll have simple, comprehensible mathematics that little Christian children can learn so that they understand when they've overdrafted their checkbooks writing tithes to the church. Robert in Australia. Bob? According to Futurama, to avoid all those Uranus jokes, the planet was renamed Eurectum. I missed that. Thank you. Irish Dave noting, BYU is just showing solidarity with Fred Phelps, a leading candidate for proxy type, you know, that proxy type baptism. Oh, I do... You know, I hadn't run across anybody that I hope got that. But remember, there is a website out there where you can do your part to counter Mormon dead baptism. AllDeadMormonsAreNowGay.com. Pick your favorite Mormon. It'll pick one for you. And you can click a button, and that's it immediately turns into a dead gay Mormon. I bet life's not so good on Kolob right now, because that website got some traction. I remember when I first saw it, I spent happy hours baptizing dead Mormons gay. Of course, I don't. Again, there's probably some higher math involved. If you dead Mormon baptize gay Joseph Smith twice, is that like multiplying negatives? And you get, I don't know. I don't know. You're not going to catch you. Well, I'll take a pass on any trips to Provo, Utah, though. By the way, if you have some notion that you would actually like to see Willard Romney's tax returns, guess what? you're just like a birther. Really? I wouldn't kid you. You are. You're just like a birther. Because Repiglick and National Committee Chairman Rince Priebus of the Royal Imodium Mounted Dragoons and his trusty possum Splat. Rince Priebus, I'll save you, Splat! Rince Priebus says you're just another birther. I wish I was kidding. I'm not.
How about Donald Trump? Because there have been reports that Donald Trump will have a major role at the Republican convention. I confirmed with an aide overnight that Mr. Trump says he will have a major role at the upcoming Republican National Convention in Tampa. Will you please, Chairman, tell us what that role will be?
What does that mean?
I'm sorry. Well, for one thing, Donald Trump's a good friend, I think, of our party, and I'm thankful to Donald Trump for all the work that he's done for us and for Governor
And that
Ryan.
Thing on his head.
So I do agree that he's been very
so what's he doing at the convention?
A good friend of ours, but I don't know right now what he's going to do at the convention, but I do know that he's important to us, and I know that he's somebody that we appreciate. Because he's telling the truth as far as where we're at in this economy, and that's what
telling the truth as far as where we're at in this economy. Right, got it. Rents? Yeah, we all understand what you. Yeah, no dog whistling involved there. Mm-mm, no, not at all. Not at all. What special thing is he going to be doing at the Republican National Convention in Tampa, Florida? Well, he's going to be he's going to be supervising the remote emergency replacement Republican National Convention. No, on Mars. On Mars. Because, among other things, that thing on Donald Trump's head has been proven to actually be able to withstand the rigors of an airless environment. Yes.
We need to talk about.
Is it a good message to send for a guy who's still a birther, still calling for the president to release his college transcripts? Is that the kind of guy you want on the podium during the Republican convention?
I have been, from the very moment that I've been chairman of this party, very clear as far as where I stand on that issue. And it's just as much of a distraction as it is for people to ask for more and more tax returns and all of these other issues.
Wait. Now, hold on, Rents. More and more and more tax returns. Well, wouldn't that have to mean that we got a lot of tax returns in the first place to sort of peruse? Because last I checked, and granted, I've been busy for the last week, so maybe I missed the memo. Last I checked, we had. Let's see. Let me work on my. I don't want to use any of those higher math skills that confuse the Christian homeschoolers and Christian academy attendants. Let's see, we had one tax return, two tax returns. Two. Yeah, we had two tax returns. So more and more and more? No, we'd just like to see, let's work with the English here for rents. We'd like to see some more. You know, a few. I mean, we don't have to have every tax return he ever filed. But if the man's too afraid to let us see his tax returns, my God, what else is he going to be scared of? I mean, we knew that George W. Bush, or we learned, much to our chagrin, that he was a little chicken shit coward. But when Willard Spaceship Money Romney won't even disclose more than two tax returns, that runs the cowardly quotient up a right smart amount.
Fact of the matter is, this election is coming down to one thing, which is, are people better off today than 3 or 4 years ago? And did this president fulfill the mission and meet his promises? And the answers are no.
And did Willard Romney disclose more than 2 years of his tax returns that were very selectively edited and not even complete in their disclosure? No. But no, I hope you understand, because I certainly do, that Rince Priebus thinks that asking for tax returns is just like alleging that the President of the United States, who was born in Hawaii and has been verified to have been, yes, It's just like alleging that he was really born in Kenya and that a telegram was sent to a Hawaiian newspaper. You know, like Steve King said from Iowa. Yeah, Irish Dave says, no, two? I don't think so, Bob. More like one and his best guess for 2011. Let's see, 2011. Can we have him write down that I'm going to make some money? Yeah. Oh, Irish Dave's on a roll. Rinse penis if uncircumcised because cleanliness is next to, it's next to something. Meanwhile, Ron and Raleigh notes under the heading, No Room. There is no room in an austere America for space exploration. After all, how can the 1% profit from the expansion of mankind's knowledge? Oh, Ron, you got to think more like a 1%er. There's minerals in them there asteroids. And probably no small amount of hordas, too, but as long as you've got a Vulcan handy who can do the mind meld on a rock and think, the pain! Yeah, Star Trek reference for the night. There's room in an austere America for space exploration, as long as that space exploration yields a profit. Yeah, I know, Jim, it does. Spelling. Rinse Priebus? Bob, that sounds like something requiring an injection of penicillin. Yeah, probably, and I don't know, swabbing with iodine or something. Rinse Priebus. It does. It just sounds nasty, doesn't it? But it's Friday on the front porch, and there's something I didn't get to. There's something I didn't get to on Prayer Meeting Wednesday. You know, most of Prayer Meeting Wednesday we use up making sport of and light of the maniac insanity of the right-wing religion industry. But every now and then, the religion industry, non-right-wing variety, gets it right, and they deserve kudos when they do. And the nuns on a bus tour is one of those get-it-right moments. Naturally, these women have a far greater understanding of the nature of their God's suffering and sacrifice than do the guys who walk around in the dresses with the pointy hats and the Prada shoes. Because the nuns are generally down there on the ground, in the trenches, with suffering humanity. The Nuns on a Bus Tour has extended an invitation to Willard Romney to spend a day with them, to learn about the plight, the suffering, the misery of those in America who are the poorest of the poor. There's an organization called Network, and it's a Roman Catholic social justice lobby. Their invitation to Willard reads as follows, that they invite him to, quote, spend a day with Catholic sisters who work every day to meet the needs of struggling families in their communities. Network was responding to the sleazy ad that was just full of right-wing racist dog whistling that claimed that Barack Obama just wants to give money away to people for just for the asking. And Network said, recent advertisements and statements from the campaign of Governor Romney demonize families in poverty and reflect woeful ignorance about the challenges faced by tens of millions of American families in these tough economic times. We are all God's children, and equal in God's eyes. Efforts to divide us by class or score political points at the expense of the most vulnerable of our brothers and sisters reveal the worst side of our country's politics. Amen, sister. These nuns, you'd kind of like to give them a ruler and let them go to work on Paul Ryan and Willard Romney's hands a little bit. Being as how Willard is not a man known for his courage, see previously scared to death to release his tax returns. Willard has had no comment on the invitation to go and do what Jesus did and walk among the poor and live among the poor and, I don't know, exhibit a degree of compassion for the poor. Then again, when you're Willard, the poor are the people who only pull in $1 million a year, or 10 million, right? With regard to the chairman of the Republican National Committee, Michael writes in, I can't hear his name and not think rinse, wash, and re-Priebus. Yeah, put it back in the Priebus and re-Priebus it a little bit. Hadn't been properly Priebused. And you know, when you take them things out and they ain't been properly Priebused, make you sick. Oh, it'll make you sick. Right. Sorry. My attempt at humor. Oh, where to? Let's see. That's kind of a Wednesday-looking thing. But, you know, it's amazing how the right-wing religion industry, so-called phony-ass Christianity, is amazing. Because dead people can reach their dead hands out of the grave and still be having an influence on living people's politics. In this case, I'm talking about D. James Kennedy of what I used to like to refer to as the Coral Snake Ministries. He was some sort of a weirdo, offshoot, bizarre Presbyterian. Well, it turns out Todd Akin, we talked about Todd on Wednesday evening, turns out Todd Akin is an acolyte of the so-called teachings of D. James Kennedy of Coral Snake Ministries. They've got some new corporate branded name. It's no longer Coral Snake Ministries. It is, where is it? I'll find it in a second. Truth in Action. It used to be Coral Snake Ministries. Now it's Truth in Action. And he is what is being described, and I've never seen this phrase before, a Christian supremacist. That just doesn't sound nice, does it? D. James Kennedy was a Christian supremacist. He died from some disease that his God decided not to heal him of. Don't know why. Over in the House of Representative Akin co-sponsored a resolution that honors Dr. Kennedy's lifetime of service and sacrifice to his God, his country, and the ideals of the Christian faith. D. James Kennedy had had his eye on representing Akin for a while, back in a book that he wrote before he shuffled off his mortal coil and went to hell. If only, yeah. There ain't one. He wrote a book called How Would Jesus Vote? And he said that Aiken is one of my favorite statesmen. A seminary graduate, and has chosen politics as his ministry. Anybody who values the freedoms enshrined in the Bill of Rights should get cold chills at that phrase, politics as ministry. D. James Kennedy gave Aiken the Christian Statesman Award, whose purpose is to recognize a person recognizes that individuals as well as nations must ultimately give account to God and are dependent on Him for prosperity and success. Representative Aiken says that the Bible is an entire blueprint for the way civilization can be structured. Christian supremacists. Jot that little phrase down, why don't you? Christian supremacists. No, Jim, I could not imagine Willard embracing a leper. It's probably difficult enough to get Willard to embrace anybody who makes less than $1 million a year. And God knows Ann won't. I made a terrible mistake this morning. Upon arising, I turned on the motel television. Flicking across the channels, I stopped. Oh, I'm sorry, Maura. I stopped on MSNBC. I hadn't seen Joe Scarborough and that bunch of babbling boobies in a long time. But there was Joe Scarborough opining about how wonderful it would be if Willard would only name Eddie Munster Ryan as his running mate. Ugh. And talking about how Anne and Willard were making the decision like the way they would decide who they like to play bridge with. No, really, bridge. God knows not pinochle, or cribbage, or poker, or go fish, or old maid. Bridge. And who was left to defend our side? This gives you an idea of just how shabby the for-profit media are. Our side was defended by none other than those progressive heroes, Ed Rendell and, yeah, former member of the House of Representatives from Tennessee. Call me. Yeah. Kind of left, made me feel kind of vulnerable as far as being all progressive and, It was like, if you've ever quit smoking, I don't know, and I have, after a while you start having the nightmares, where in your dream, you pick up a cigarette and you smoke one and you realize you're hooked all over again. And you wake up in a cold sweat realizing, phew, I didn't really smoke. I'm still a non-smoker. But it just gives you, it just scares the daylights out of you. Well, I had that feeling this morning, clicking over and running across Morning Joe. And poor little Mika sitting there next to him. One of these days she's going to reach over and just roundhouse him. Oh, good. You know, all we got in common is our misery, so the least we can do is share it. Under the heading Scarborough and Ryan, Michael says, oh my effing God, Bob, I woke up to that shit. I was waiting for someone to pass Joe a tissue, and I don't mean for wiping tears. Barf. Yeah, I felt all dirty. I immediately went, you know, it was morning, I was going to do it anyway, but I headed for the shower with an extra spring in my step. I wanted to get there a half a second early or something. Went ahead and used the rosemary mint shampoo for the rest of me, too, because I just wanted that tingly mint feeling to make me feel like my skin was cleansed of all the morning Joe on it. Patty writes in, she says, hey, darling. I love it when I get called darling. As I was listening, I was thinking R Money only gave up a partial 2010 tax return and a promise he'd give up his 2011s when he had them done. Patty says, I figure after his multiple extensions, after he loses the election. Anyway, I found it and a link. This is what R Money released. Have to go now. Got a rinse on my Prebus, and I have to have it looked at. It's a real owie. Oh, we are so sophomoric and juvenile. Why can't we be serious like the intelligent conservatives, like Todd Akin and Paul Ryan and Ted Cruz, who are very intelligent conservatives? See, I get myself in trouble this way. I mentioned bridge. Jim writes, bridge, of course, contract. Or auction. We'll have a few rubbers. Lay down your dummy and I'll play on it. By Jove, when 9 o'clock here, that straw's going on the tequila bottle and pudding pops. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, rinse Prebus. Reminds me of that old Johnny Carson chestnut. You remember. You drive down to the Schlossen cutoff and get out of the car and cut off your Schlossen. You take it out and rinse your Prebus. Because, you know, if you don't rinse your Prebus, well, those things go bad in a hurry and the smell is just... Well, it makes you feel like you've had too much Morning Joe. So I tell you what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break. And, you know, let's end this filibobster for God's sakes. Can we do that? Yeah, you know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333, and I'm in a scrubbing mood. This is America's listener-supported, emphasis on listener-supported. I should mention that we did get considerable help the other night, and now we're only a couple of $100 away from being all the way to where we need to be for 3 days ago. So any help is a lot of help. PayPal button and snail mail address are both at headonradionetwork.com. Basically, 20 folks at $10 a piece would finally get us all the way to August the 7th. So it keeps the lights on. It's what keeps the show going. Thank you very kindly. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. 6 minutes past the hour. We will go to the phones. If you want to get in on the conversation, I encourage you to do so before we get to like the last 10 minutes of the program. A little observation from Patty, who has the... background to make the observation. A little observation from Patty on the issue of Mrs. Raw Money, you know, Ann, and her therapy horse. Yeah. Patty writes in and says, "Oh, Bob, that BS of Ann R. Money keeps running about how they have her dressage horse to help her with her MS. It's her therapy. Oh, damn her to hell," says Patty. "I'm calling BS, BS, BS on that. Look, I teach enabled kids to ride and have for a long time. In order for a horse to be therapy for a person, you have to actually ride. Watching it trot around is not freaking therapy. They write off all its care as medical expense. What the... Please! I have never written off anything on our 5-plus horses, and we use ours for work and therapy. Why, oh why, can the GDMF and media not do anything freaking approaching its freaking job?" That, Patty notes, is rhetorical. "Okay, rant off," Patty says. "I just had to say it to someone, and the horses are out to the big pasture, Bill's in the tractor out yonder, and the fur babes are in the yard. I find myself alone cooking and screaming in the kitchen. You know, I ruin more people's kitchen experiences and dining experiences. It's probably a special level of hell for me out there." "Hell, who am I kidding?" Patty says. "The horses and fur pups are sick of my ranting about politics. The name R Money makes them kind of green, too." Yeah, but you know what? They realize they're not strapped to the car, Patty. So, got to give them more credit. But Patty raises an interesting point. You can't look at a horse and get therapy, or can you? Remember when Flush Flembaugh admitted to the world that he was that he was all hooked on street drugs, that he'd been sending his maid out with cigar boxes full of cash to bring back cigar boxes full of OxyContin? Remember that? I do. I know you do, too. Well, he went off and got himself some therapy out in Arizona somewhere, part of which involved Rush looking at horses. Because I think you would probably have the American Humane Society and PETA right on your ass, yesterday, if they ever got wind of anybody trying to put Flush Flembaugh on a horse. And there's just some things you don't do. I'm imagining he probably wasn't left alone with the horses either. "Can you still hear the horse, Clarice?" Right, you know what I mean? He says he's making him a horsey suit. So I don't know, maybe you can look at a horse. I like looking at horses. I used to love riding them. One of these days I've got to get out and visit Patty and just, you know, get on a horse and all that wide open space. And, you know. Fill your hand. No, I'm not going to go all John Wayne. Yeah, Irish Dave, you know, if you rinse your Prius, it will rain tomorrow. No, wait, maybe that's if you wash your car elevator. Oh, by the way, the spaceship house in Iowa, it has an underground car wash. Jesus! What? Working at the car wash. I'm going to stop. Okay, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Brother Cossack, what's up?
You brother, you.
I don't feel it, man. I'm about dog tired.
Good. Well, you know, my memory goes back a little bit further than does yours.
Probably true. Not even probably. Absolutely true.
It's guaranteed. And I remember back in the late 50s, early 60s, watching attempted launches from Wallops Island.
Attempt, emphasis on attempted, right?
Yeah. 5, 4, 3, 2 Oh, shit.
Right.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that mercifully didn't have anybody on them, right?
Correct. But that's one of the reasons we were all so transfixed to watch Alan Shepard actually get on one of those things and say, light this candle. Because the possibility was that's exactly what was going to happen.
Yeah, go up with all the guidance of a bottle rocket?
Well, that or the whole thing would just go off on the launching pad. So a bunch of those, too. And I tell you, they had stones, Bob. They had stones.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
Yeah. The original seven, they really were better than the average. You've got to admit. We like to try and bring everything down to, you know, a human level. But, you know, sometimes these people were better than normal. That's, again, for all their faults, for all their foibles, we were goddamn lucky to have the founding fathers we had. I mean, Washington really was a Cincinnati.
Yeah, he didn't go broke on the war or anything. But, yeah, he went back to his plow.
I mean, it helps that he was one of the richest, if not the richest, planter in the country. And, you know, he was good. And you look at, you know, that the true exemplar was Ben Franklin. I mean, we were damn lucky to have him.
And you know, there was real genius at work. I mean, James Madison, for all my goofing, was a little guy with a great big brain.
Oh yeah. I mean, that's the problem. He himself was the stuff of comedy, and yet his wife, she really was the hostess of D.C. You know, very gregarious, very outgoing.
lovely she for her it. Day.
Yeah, she made up for a lot of his social lacking.
Well, I'll tell you what, if you get a chance and you go and find Dr. Bill's discussion of American exceptionalism from last night, it will just... remember those old Maxell commercials, Cossack? The ones where dude's hair was blowing straight back? Yeah, that. Yeah. It was that kind of an experience. To hear him explain how the right wing has utterly twisted and perverted the notion of exceptionalism into some sort of I've got mine, screw you mentality. That America is exceptional because it allows a teeny tiny handful of people to get obscenely wealthy. I mean, Dr. Bill, he couldn't have deconstructed it into any more tiny pieces had he been using a scalpel.
Oh, did you hear about everyone's favorite right-wing historian?
Oh, you mean Barton?
Yeah,
I got a note here from Dr. John about it, as a matter of fact. This is a beautiful thing, because it was just Wednesday night when I was talking with Dr. Bill on the show, and the questions were being propounded. Well, you know, how can we use real history when you've got fraud merchants like David Barton and wall builders out there just making crap up?
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, we know that if there is a God, she is a God of irony. A matter of days later, David Barton gets taken all the way down to the ground. No, he wasn't caught with a little boy or anything, although that wouldn't surprise me.
Or a dead girl.
No, he's just been flat out caught lying in his book. And he's been lying all along, but nobody else has been willing to call him on it.
Correct.
But now he's been caught. He had a book called The Jefferson Lies.
Mm-hmm.
And this book purported to claim that Thomas Jefferson was a Bible-believing Christian with a deep personal relationship with the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Bullshit.
Utter and complete and fresh. Hadn't even been on the ground long enough to let the mushrooms grow, you know?
I mean...
So the publisher of this book, having been challenged on everything in it, has pulled it. The book has been pulled. It's been disappeared. It's been sent down the memory hole. It is no more. It is pining for the fjords, Cossack.
Yeah. As well it should be.
And you know, this is a religious publishing house in the first place. It's called Thomas Nelson Publishing. Their senior vice president and publisher, Brian Hampton, said, "When the concerns came in from multiple people and that had weight too, we were trying to sort things out. Were these matters of opinion? Were they differences of interpretation? But as we got into it, our conclusion was that the criticisms were correct. There were historical details, matters of fact, not matters of opinion, that were not supported at all." And that's about as close as you can get to saying that David Barton is a great big old honking stinking liar.
Yeah. You lying sack of...
Yeah. So get this. I mean, you remember in Cecil B. DeMille's Ten Commandments where Yul Brynner says, "Let the name of Moses no longer be spoken in the land of Egypt." Remember that part?
Yeah.
Well, okay, this is the publishing equivalent of that. The book has already been pulled off the Thomas Nelson website. The publisher is in the process of pulling down its availability as an e-book from retail partners. Publishing rights are being reverted to the author, and the physical copies of the book are in the process of being removed from bookstores. That thing has done turned toxic.
Well, you've been to Charlottesville, haven't you?
Yes, yes.
Monticello.
Yes.
And you've seen the Bible.
Yes.
His Bible.
Yeah, the one with all the claptrap and foo-fraw and miracles and the gobbledygook pulled out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets considerably thinner when you do that.
It's tiny, slender little thing.
It turns into a pamphlet.
Yeah, essentially. And that was done in Jefferson's own hand. He did that. Now, what good Bible-believing, Bible-thumping...
evangelical...
drooling... you know, drool cup wearing nitwit would do that.
Don't forget the house helmet. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how much more blatant can you be?
Oh, David Barton has even argued that Jefferson was a civil rights advocate who would have freed his slaves except he couldn't afford to.
Well, he couldn't. I mean, he wrote about that. He was having moral qualms about it. But that still didn't change the fact. You know, that he owned slaves, that he worked slaves. He couldn't possibly have run Monticello if it weren't for slaves.
No, and the only, you know, for all his agrarian fascinations and advocacy, the only thing that ever turned a profit on his entire plantation was a nailery Cossack that was run by the slaves. They made nails. Everything else was a loser.
Well.
Oh, no, I mean, it really lost money. You know, they auctioned off his entire estate when he died because he died in such debt.
Correct. He died penniless, essentially.
Yep.
But, that's what I'm saying. Barton contends that Ben Franklin was a Christian. He was anything but.
Yeah. Among other things, Dr. Bill pointed out that he was a bit of a snob, Franklin, because he said, you know, the hoi polloi will need some religion or something to sort of keep them straight and honest, but not me. I'm enlightened. I don't need religious values to make me be the honest man I am. I'm just that kind of a guy.
Yeah. Well, He was standing head and shoulders above most of the columnists, you gotta admit.
Oh yeah, yeah, no, I agree with him. You know, I'm one of those people who doesn't think that religion because that's one of those things the religion industry is so fond of claiming, that you can't have morals and values without a close personal relationship with the Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Wrong.
Absolutely wrong. But nonetheless, they claim it, just like David Barton claimed that, well, all that crap. And it is. It is absolute, utter, unmitigated crap.
And how could anyone possibly, you know, well,
Oh, I didn't realize this. On the Barton book, there's one thing that makes it even better, Cossack.
Oh, do tell.
I just saw the cover of it. The Jefferson Lies. Exposing the myths you've always believed about Thomas Jefferson by David Barton. And here's the fun part. Forward by Glenn Beck.
Of course. That's what I was going to say, that no sane person would believe this guy, but then there's Beck.
So, double the fun.
God. Of all the people. Oh. No.
But David Barton says, Thomas Kidd of World Mag, which is a Christian Christian publication, evangelical and all that. Thomas Kidd says, Barton told me that he regards Thomas Nelson's decision, the publisher, as a strange scenario. He added that the press has not tried to engage him about the ostensible problems in the book, and that Thomas Nelson officials simply notified him by email that they were stopping publication. But just as was said in the chat room, Cossack, Mr. Gibson said, watch out, Bob, they're only hiding it until we all forget. Trust me, they will dust it off and run it again down the road. And guess what? Guess who the publisher has been for all of David Barton's other books?
Hmm.
Wall Builders Press! So that's what that language about publication rights are reverting to the author.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Good grief.
So there you have it. Well, brother, I tell you what, I hope you have yourself a good weekend. And I'm glad you called in.
You too, Bob. I thought I'd save you from your filibuster.
And I appreciate it. I appreciate it sincerely. It gets a little lonely around here sometimes. Take care, Cossack.
We enjoy anyway.
All right. Thanks.
Have a nice weekend, Bob.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Our old buddy Cossack from North Florida. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, it's me again. I don't mean to wear out my welcome, but I got something to share with you. I meant to share before, okay?
Okay, sure. Go ahead, Jim.
You ever heard of Mose Allison?
Seems like I... Yeah, but fill me in.
Well, he basically did a song called Your Mind Is on Vacation. And in it, it reminds me a lot of the crap that I hear that you've been talking about. If talk was criminal, you'd lead a life of crime because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
That's them, ain't it?
That's them. But I just wanted to share those lyrics with you because I remember him, and he, well, he had a great deal of influence on my way of thinking when I first heard his lyrics on the radio and stuff like that. And it's true.
Indeed it is. Indeed
you know, if silence is golden, you couldn't raise a dime because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
Okay, now you got me. Now you got me curious. Hang on here. We got to find this, Jim. It is, after all, Friday on the front porch. Stand by. Mose Allison?
Mm-hmm. Is that, Mose Allison, MoseAllison. And it's lyrics to Your Mind Is on Vacation.
Okay.
You're sitting there yakking right in my...
Okay, here we go. Here we go. I got it, I think.
And I guess I'm going to have to put you right in your place. You know, if silence was golden, you couldn't raise a dime because your mind is on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
All right, let's check it out. Jim, have a good night.
Okay, bud.
Bye now. Oh, I love it. I love a good song recommendation.
Exactly like you own the place. You know if silence was golden, you couldn't raise a dime. Because your mind's on vacation and your mouth is working overtime. You're quoting figures and dropping names. You're telling stories and playing games. You're overlapping when things ain't funny. You're trying to sound like the big money. Because your mind's on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
vacation and your mouth is working overtime. Your man's on vacation and your mouth is working overtime.
Good call, Jim. Good call. Moses Allison, your mind is on vacation. And yeah, Irish Dave, I have heard that one, Parchman Farm. Yeah, I've heard that. Goodness me. A little follow-up on David Barton. He calls what he does to history, you know, lying. He calls his lying historical reclamation. This comes from a post over at Crooks and Liars by Leah Nelson. David Barton is a liar and a ratfink, and NPR thinks so too. You want to hear David Barton? No, you don't. But I'm going to make you listen to him anyway because Leah over at Crooks and Liars took the time to post this. This is David Barton and young super Christian, not so young anymore, Kirk Cameron, explaining how the founding fathers wanted Bibles in schools.
So I went to the leading expert in the country for original source documents during the founding era. David Barton has the large...
Wait, stop. The leading expert in the country for founding original source documents on the founding. I'm not trying to drop names or act like I'm anybody who's anybody or anything, but I've actually been in the same room with the guy who is the leading expert on original source documents on the founding. His name's John Kaminsky, and he's at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. By the time we were done talking, he was calling me Bob, and I was calling him John. It was pretty cool. It's one of the neatest things about the Prism series is that you have a chance to get information, real historical teaching, based on primary source documents from people that just, I know they wouldn't be otherwise available to me. And it's all there. But anyway, let's take fine, upstanding, evangelical Christian Kirk Cameron at his word. Let's hear about some of this here expertise that David Barton has that's now been exposed as a pack of freaking lies.
Just private collection of Bibles and documents and textbooks.
Oh, wait a minute. Original primary source documents for the founding consist of Bibles? Excuse me?
From early America. I wanted to see John Hancock's John Hancock for myself.
What are these? This is a family Bible done in 1798. This Bible was funded by about a dozen signers of the Constitution and signers of the Declaration, as well as by President John Adams and Vice President Thomas Jefferson. They're the guys who put up the financial backing to do this Bible.
Funded by signers of the Declaration
and Constitution. Yeah.
And we have the provenance on that how? I mean, we're come on, Kirk Cameron, you know, butter wouldn't melt in your mouth. Where's the provenance? Where's the proof? Because, you know, if you don't have any provenance, you don't have any goddamn data. Just say it.
Constitution. Yeah, Gunning Bedford, signer of the Constitution. John Dixon, signer of the Constitution. You had so many of the signers who were part of this. Alexander Hamilton helped fund this Bible.
Because they wanted families together.
They wanted the Word of God out to every family.
Because they believed that would make for a better country.
Makes for a better country. Makes for a better faith. And again, this is a product of our atheist, agnostic, deist founding fathers, or at least we're told that's who they are today. When you see this stuff, you go, wait a minute. These guys, why would any atheist, agnostic, or deist promote the Word of God, fund it, and want it distributed to every family and everyone in America? Why?
Actually, there's an answer to that. You went over it on Monday, Tuesday, in the Prism series. There were two, Jefferson proposed 3 years of education. Mind-blowing to hear this. Jefferson proposed 3 years of education for every boy. Sorry, girls. You know. Every white boy. And it was to be 3 years of historical education because Jefferson said, listen, if we teach them history, they'll be able to spot the frauds, they'll be able to spot the shams, they'll understand where they came from, they'll know where they're going. On the other hand, Dr. Benjamin Rush of Philadelphia proposed something similar, but he wanted the education to be religious. And as noted, Ben Franklin said, yeah, let's have a religious education for everybody because it'll keep them in line. This has nothing to do, as is the case with most organized religion, nothing to do with the saving of souls, and everything to do with social control. It ain't rocket science. It's cultural manipulation. And the founders and framers were sharp enough to engage in it. So there's your answer, but let's go back. Let's go on.
Why would they find a Bible that you can take and give out to your neighbors to evangelize them? Doesn't make sense if they're atheist agnostics. Now, on the other hand, if these guys happen to be Christians, this makes a lot of sense.
Or if they happen to be trying to build a society in which they're going to have compliant citizens who will do what the 1% tell them to do, because after all, these guys were all members of the 1% at the time. Makes even more sense that way, doesn't it? What's that old rule about simple answers and elegant being the most likely to be? Yeah.
This is one of the rarest books in the world. This little book right here, really delicate. It's done in 1782. This is the first Bible ever printed in English in America. They printed 10,000 of them. There's 22 left in private hands. This is one of them. So, one of the rarest books in the world.
Come on, David, get to the part where you show us the check for the last brunch. Pretty sure Father Guido Sarducci sold that to David Barton.
What's cool is this Bible, the Bible of the Revolution, was printed by the Congress of the United States. So Congress printed the first English language Bible.
What? Huh? Now that was just breezing by with the cool little soundtrack music going on behind it. Congress printed the first English language Bible in the United States. There wasn't a Congress until after 1787. Now, there was a Continental Congress before that, but they didn't...
What, Edith?
Before 1775, let's say the Continental Congress printed that Bible. There was no English language Bible printed in the United States before 1775? I'm doubting that. I'm calling bullshit. Alex, I'll take bullshit for 1,000.
They said in Congress that this Bible is, quote, a neat edition of the Holy Scriptures for the use of our schools, end quote.
You know, the schools that they weren't going to let any of the dark-skinned children, and maybe not any of the girls, go to, just saying.
So the Founding Fathers in Congress printed the first Bible in English, and they did it for the use of schools?
Okay, now it's just the first Bible in English. This guy's a pathological freaking liar. Tyndale, please, anybody? He doesn't he go back to around Henry VIII time and stuff? Or am I thinking of the wrong guy? The first Bible in English. I want to go back. I want you to understand why they pulled this freak's book. Because he's a liar.
Bible is, quote, a neat edition of the Holy Scriptures for the use of our schools, end quote. So the Founding Fathers in Congress printed the first Bible in English, and they did it for the use of schools?
The Founding Fathers printed the first Bible in English, and they did it for the schools. The first Bible in English. Now, if we could magically make this fraud merchant appear And I'm sure you'd say, well, I didn't mean like ever or anything. Well, God damn it, you said first Bible in English. No qualifiers, no adjectives, no adverbs. First Bible in English. Okay, first is an adjective. And the fundies and the representative Aikens of this world just lap this stuff up like a kitten does cream. Or mouse innards.
I didn't think they wanted the Bible in schools. That's what we hear. That's what we've been told.
That's what the Supreme Court said. But see, Barton's another one of these Christian supremacists. It doesn't matter if, I mean, it doesn't matter if maybe there's a Sikh in the classroom, or somebody who's Jewish, or Muslim, or Hindu, or Buddhist, or Baha'i. Need us a Bible in the classroom. The first Bible in English.
Bible was put in schools back in 1647, first public school law. We kept in schools till 1963 when the court said, yeah, we've done it 320 years, let's do something different. And now we're told the Founding Fathers never wanted the Bible in schools. That one piece of history right there proves exactly
the
opposite.
No, the fact that he's willing to lie about the first Bible in English subjects everything else that he says to intense scrutiny because his credibility has been impeached.
Real simple. So hold on. The United States Congress was commissioning and printing Bibles to be given to all the people because they knew that that's what would produce the character necessary to make America blossom and flourish and thrive.
Or obey and behave. Jeebus. Now, if you do want to find out the broad scope of the lies that David Barton tells, there's a book you can go to for that. There's a book for that. It's called Getting Jefferson Right. And he deconstructs David Barton, right down to his toenails. Interestingly, as a sidebar to this, Leah over at Crooks and Liars notes that a judge in Alabama, Stan, has ruled that a lawsuit may go forward claiming that an executive from Alabama Public Television who refused to broadcast that BS that you just heard and was fired for it, the suit can go forward. On the claim that the commissioners of Alabama Public Television fired him violated the state's Sunshine Law because they discussed his job behind closed doors. And then this quote from Reverend Daryl Keel of Hoover, Alabama's Shepherd of the Hills Lutheran Church. This may knock you back a little bit. As a Christian and a pastor and a father and a grandfather, I've always trusted public television to be a source of appropriate entertainment and also reliable information about history and culture. I am disappointed that Alabama Public Television is even considering broadcasting David Barton's History of America, what I believe is a biased and misdirected history. Another one of them fancy ways of saying lies. Hey, Ray. What a mind. Ray writes in, hey, Grandpa, what's for supper? Lox, bagels, vino, and Jesus meat. Ray asks, have you ever come across intelligent discussion as to what would have happened to Europe after the fall of Rome had Rome not adopted the church? I've had that discussion here. The fall of Rome was as much occasioned by the church as by the Vandals, Visigoths, Goths, and Huns. I mean, it's a very complicated thing, but when the church starts suppressing knowledge, and, for instance, as they did in Alexandria, Egypt, stripping a woman naked and beating her to death for not believing the right way. Civilization is going out the door, and the door is closing behind civilization. And that's what the church did. Yeah, see? Yeah. I thought so. Thank you, Jim. Tyndale's Bible, in English, wasn't it? Came out during the Counter-Reformation and was used by Henry VIII and Anne Boleyn to justify their union. And I don't think they ever made it to America. But no. David Barton says that's the first Bible in English. They lie. Oh, cool. Haven't heard from Georgia in a while. She says, Mose Allison's one of my favorites, and I just love this song. Fits the rats to a T. Thanks, Jim, and thank you for playing it. Loving the show and the great Barton put down. This is a really good day with lots of smiley faces. Love to you all, and hugs to Agnes, and I will deliver those personally. Keep fighting. Signed, Georgia. Thank you, Georgia. It's awful good to hear from you. And by the way, thanks to Thomas for sending that Crooks and Liars post along. I really appreciate it. I don't want to be misconstrued because I realize I probably sound a little bit surprised. But what I'm surprised by is not that David Barton turns out to be a liar. He's been a liar all along. As we say here in the hills, the truth ain't in him. But what surprises me is that A, National Public Radio actually called him out, and B, that his publisher didn't just pump the filth out into the stream of commerce anyway in the name of making a buck. Lest I be taken as entirely Pollyanna-ish, understand I'll do penance for this, I'm sure. But it's a little inspiring to see one of these filth merchants, one of these fraudsters caught. Forward by Glenn Beck. Oh, my aching back. Tim from L.A. noting, getting Jefferson right, fact-checking claims about our third president with a link. It's from wthrockmorton.com. Apparently Christian Kirk Cameron is lying, says Tim. Mr. Throckmorton describes his book. That's the title of an upcoming ebook I'm publishing on Amazon.com along with fellow Grove City College professor of political science Michael Coulter. We're greatly expanding the posts I did here, examining and debunking claims by David Barton and others about Thomas Jefferson. Most of the book is new material and examines claims about Jefferson in the areas of church and state relations, education, the Bible, his religious views, and current politics. There's an extensive section on the Jefferson Bible, you know, the one without all the claptrap, and other claims related to the Bible rarely included in any resource on Jefferson. We're including an annotated bibliography of accurate and helpful resources as well. see people who are actually interested in facts do that, you know, that bibliography stuff and then annotating. One book that won't be on that list but we discuss frequently is David Barton's new book, The Jefferson Lies, which is now available on Amazon. Oh my God. Okay, so that's being pulled. I've read it, and we include substantial rebuttals to claims made in the book. In fact, one of the claims I responded to when I wrote about Kirk Cameron's new movie, Monumental, in that post I noted that Barton misled viewers about a family Bible, and indeed in his book he identifies it as the Thompson Hot Press Bible. You heard it. Barton claims the Bible was funded by a dozen signers of the Declaration and Constitution, including Jefferson, Barton says. He says Jefferson personally helped finance the printing of one of America's groundbreaking editions of the Bible. In truth, he bought a Bible from Thompson and Small, along with over 1,270 other people. In fact, Jefferson didn't finish paying for it until after the Bible was printed. It was completed in 1798, and Jefferson didn't pay his final $10 until early 1799. Mr. Throckmorton closes saying there is a Bible verse. This is Tim. There's a Bible verse that Tim knows a lot of Bible verses. There's a Bible verse that Kirk Cameron and David Barton are not following. The Judeo part of the Judeo-Christian Bible, the Ten Commandments. It's King James Bible, Cambridge edition. Thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor. The same king who had male lover, King James. Yeah, that one. You know, homosexuality. Yep. The sinful act committed by choice, according to Cameron. Tim notes, shaking head, this is why I am an atheist. So, yes, we have reached near the end of the program. I don't have the heart to end the program on the story of the strip-searched mom in Florida. Maybe we'll save that for more in Monday. That's one of those that I... You know, some husbands worry about their wives looking over their shoulders and catching them looking at porn. I worry about Agnes looking over my shoulder and seeing headlines that make her just scream and cry. And it's one of them, and we're going to save it for more in Monday. Thanks very kindly to all of you who make all of this happen. We've missed a few shows, but in a way we haven't, because there has been a wealth of information every day this week. And there will be more on Monday. Prism ends Monday around noonish Eastern time. I implore you, I urge you, to go and catch the real history as discussed in the PRISM program. You don't have to, but you might even wind up dropping me a note and saying, oh, Bob, this was wonderful, this was magnificent, thank you so much. I'm armed to the teeth with real factual knowledge and can push back against any Barton-influenced right-wing freak that dares open his mouth in my general direction. You just might. Another reminder, this program happens because of your kind contributions. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I don't like talking about this kind of stuff, but, you know, there it is. And if you look at the little graph at headonradionetwork.com, see how far behind we are. We're about $200 behind where we should be for August the 7th, and that means we're probably another couple of $100 behind where we should be by the time August the 13th rolls around. Your help, your contributions are what keeps this going, and they are much appreciated. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, who has probably forgotten more Old Testament than David Barton will ever learn. And that's a compliment. Thanks to John Fox, still fighting off the flu, and hope you get better too, Gail. Thanks for all your help yesterday. You made Jeremy Suri's presentation this morning, which was magnificent, possible with your input. John's awesome that way. Awesome, too, is Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything you hear on the horn goes through the servers of White Rose Society. Ben Birch literally has been a bastion of progressive broadcasting for 10 years now, and that's just amazing. And he's never sent a bill. Thanks go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT.org, ACHECT.org. Go there, take action, be a part of the end of Appalachia's agony by helping us get the ACHE Act through Congress. And remember, I'll be talking to Sam Cedar on Monday about the ACHE Act, long about noon Eastern Time. I'm looking forward to it. Sam's great. So have a wonderful weekend, everybody. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.